Section 3. Hypothesis formation and prior probability. As we saw in Chilton's case, and can see in the case of any other scholar claiming to know things about the historical Jesus, many theories of historicity are too speculative, some even more so than theories of myth, and most are as much as or nearly so. That so many historians defend theories that could be true but for which not enough evidence survives to really know exposes a serious methodological problem in the field, which I discussed and demonstrated in Proving History. There I, and other scholars I cite, find dozens of contradictory Jesuses proposed. They can't all be true, and that means odds are none are. That there are so many theories like this is a testament to how easy it is to construct a theory that looks seductively tantalizing and explains all the evidence, which means the ease of constructing such a theory counts against any such theory being true, not in favor of it. Because the prior probability that any such theory is correct must necessarily be very small, until we can reliably eliminate all competing theories. To quantify the point, if scholars of equal competence defend from the exact same evidence 10 different Jesuses, the initial odds that any one of them is correct can be no better than 1 in 10. And almost certainly worse than that, since it's entirely possible none of those Jesuses is correct. This is because a prior probability is the probability we must assign before looking at specific evidence for and against each theory. What happens when we do look at that evidence is accounted for in the consequent probabilities, the probability that we would have the evidence we do if that particular theory were true, in contrast to what that probability would be if some other theory were true. But before we do that, all we have are the competing proposals of roughly equally competent observers from the same body of evidence. That means it's not wise to defend the historicity of Jesus by defending a particular theory of historicity. It makes far more sense to class together several, or hopefully all or nearly all, theories of historicity by claims they make in common. For example, if all 10 contradictory theories of historicity all make the same claim, for example, that a man named Jesus, who was later called Christ, was crucified under Pontius Pilate, then the prior probability of historicity per se would not be 1 in 10, but nearly 100%, if, that is, the prior probability of mythicism and other theories of historicity were nearly zero. Because the full 100%, the full probability space, must be apportioned among all logically possible theories. But that means, even if the prior probability of myth were as high as, let's say, 25%, we would still have, in this case, a prior probability of historicity of 75%, because 100% minus 25% equals 75%, as long as we stick with that minimum historical claim about Jesus. Otherwise, for each of the 10 competing theories of historicity, unless we can demonstrate otherwise, the prior probability of any one of them being true is at best a paltry 7.5%. In other words, 1/10 of the full 75%. And that's far less than the 25% prior probability for myth, though again, only in this hypothetical scenario. If we classed 3 of the 10 theories together by, let's say, the claim that Jesus was an apocalyptic prophet, and insisted on defending only that, then, all else being equal, we'd still have a prior probability of only maybe 25%, 1/3 of the whole 75%. Which leaves us with equal odds against myth. So it may be better to drop unnecessary claims like that, no matter how well evidenced they may be, and focus only on what all or most theories of historicity assert in common, because that will stand the best chance of showing the inadequacy of mythicism, if such can be done. But trade-offs may be necessary. A simpler theory will always have a higher prior probability, but will be less successful at explaining problematic evidence. To explain such evidence, to make that evidence highly probable on your theory, you often have to add elements to the theory. For example, as I discuss in Proving History, all the ancient accounts we have of how and why Jesus came to be crucified are historically unintelligible. Thus, the hypothesis, there was a man named Jesus who was later called Christ, who was crucified under Pontius Pilate, does not make this evidence very probable at all. Such a fact, had it occurred, would sooner have produced much more intelligible accounts of the how and why of it. Indeed, it should have produced apologetic accounts of those facts in the very epistles, yet nary a word on this is to be found there, as I'll show in chapter 11. Thus, historicists need to dress up their theory with a whole series of elaborations, assumptions that serve to explain these oddities in the evidence, making them probable again. And these are assumptions, since such details are not present in the sources. Indeed, that's precisely the problem these assumptions are meant to solve. And as I discuss extensively in Proving History, this procedure of adding ad hoc assumptions to a theory is not illegitimate. It simply has to be accounted for correctly when combining and dividing probabilities. There are two ways this procedure can go. If you have no evidence whatsoever that an assumption you are adding is true, that is, independently of the oddity you are inventing it to explain, but also no evidence it's false, then you must have the prior probability. I explain the mathematical reason for this in Proving History, but in short, if there is no evidence for or against a claim, then its probability is 50%, which means the probability space shared by all theories, those with this assumption and those without it, is half occupied by theories with this assumption and half occupied with theories without it. So if our total prior were 75%, the prior probability of a theory with this added assumption being true can only be 37.5%, half of 75%, which is unlikely to permit the new assumption to make any improvement in the final probability, and thus such assumptions are often not worth adding. On the other hand, if you have evidence that an assumption you are adding is true, again, independently of the oddity you are inventing it to explain, then you're in a better situation. For example, if given certain background evidence, such as regarding the way early Christians can be independently established to have behaved, or regarding the documented psychology of religious fanatics in general, an assumption is already highly probable, then that probability is substituted for the halving of probability just discussed. For instance, if it can be independently proven that early Christians interpreted the Old Testament allegorically 90% of the time in a given context, then a theory that depends on their doing so in a specific case, assuming nothing in that case argues for or against this otherwise, will share 90% of the probability space with theories that exclude this assumption, not 50%. Hence, in the hypothetical scenario at hand, such a theory would have a prior probability of 67.5%. In other words, 9/10 of 75%. Or, if this subordinate probability were as near to 100% as makes all odds, like the assumption that Christians were human beings, essentially biologically the same as other human beings, then the prior probability would effectively just be the full 75%. Conversely, implausible fringe theories, which depend on assumptions that are extremely improbable to begin with, are of such low prior probability that they don't even show up in the math. Also for reasons I explain, in Proving History. This is, in effect, the role that background knowledge plays in determining probabilities. Things that are established as basically certain can safely be assumed without lowering your prior probabilities. Of course, this works the other way around, too. If an assumption you propose is actually demonstrably improbable, then you actually lower your theory's prior probability by less than half. That's why implausible additions to a theory meant only to rescue that theory from failing to fit the evidence can never logically succeed at that, because they will always lower the prior probability more than they will increase the consequent probability, and thus they will actually lower the posterior probability, the actual probability that your theory is true, instead of raising it as such an addition was supposed to do. In other words, such desperate theories simply become increasingly improbable and thus unbelievable. Accordingly, all triumphalist theories can be shown to have vanishingly small prior probabilities. They also happen to do a poor job of explaining the evidence. Hence, none are worth any objective historian's consideration. Perhaps such a hypothesis can still be rationally maintained on evidence other than the historical, but that is of no relevance to historians who are tasked with determining only what the historical evidence supports, and that will be the only question asked here. That leaves reductivist and mythicist hypotheses. In Proving History, I demonstrated that we can parcel out the entire prior probability space to just four classes of hypothesis altogether. H, which is that Jesus was a historical person mythicized. Not H, Jesus was a mythical person historicized. H subscript 0, Jesus was a historical person not mythicized, which is the triumphal hypothesis, and not H, subscript 0. Jesus was a mythical person not historicized, which would be more like a postmodern idea. As I argued there, the latter two classes of hypothesis, even collectively, consume a vanishingly small piece of the prior probability space, certainly less than a 1 in a million share. They can therefore be ignored. That leaves us with bare historicism and bare mythicism. However, both must be more developed than this, not only to make our job easier by ruling out all implausible variations of them, but also to leave us with hypotheses that make more substantial predictions. This will give us, in each case, a minimal theory, one that does not entail any ambitious or questionable claims, thus keeping its prior probability relatively high, but still leaves us with a theory substantial enough to test, thus keeping its consequent probability relatively high as well. The minimal Jesus myth theory I will develop in the next chapter. Here I will develop the minimal theory of historicity. It's important to take note of this step, for it must be made to avoid a common error on both sides of the debate, that of conflating plausible with implausible theories. In general, we have those two theories of historicity, the reductive theory that Jesus was an ordinary but obscure guy who inspired a religious movement and copious legends about him, and the triumphalist theory, that the Gospels are totally or almost totally true. Either side of the historicity debate will at times engage in a fallacy here, citing evidence supporting the reductive theory in defense of the triumphalist theory, as if that were valid, or citing the absurdity of the triumphalist theory, as if this refuted the reductive theory, as if that were valid. The same error occurs the other way around. Citing evidence against a hyperbolic theory of myth as refuting a reasonable one, or defending a hyperbolic theory by citing evidence in support of a reasonable one. Both procedures are again invalid.